I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ah, the internet. It's given us so much greatness. Sneezing pandas, planking, even the podcast you're listening to right now. Also, eBay. Did you know 90% of items sold on eBay are brand new? The best in beauty and health, things for baby and toys for all. So much of it is brand new, and you can get it for less on eBay. Download the eBay app now for the best deals delivered fast.
I am still up 20 grand from this last time I stick it in.
Well, let's see, I meet Bobby Riggs, who's a Wimbledon tennis champion, playing ping pong with a skillet. I beat Eva Knievel playing golf with a bow and arrow. The arrow was my ball. And I'm the guy that bet he could make a cat pick up a Coke bottle and put it on top of a building.
So I'm glad you wrote down all your stories. You got it fixed up?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, close enough.
Yeah, it'll
that'll do.
Do.
So like I said, I thought we'd start with a favourite poker story. You remember the night instantly, so I want to get your view on it. No, not that one.
Okay, thank goodness for that.
It was night at Crown, just playing normal poker, and it's just one of those nights where things are working, you know, things are going the right way. And I think you were up 300 or 400, and I'm up a couple of hundred. And you're looking for ways to entertain yourself. And we got some lad who's come in wearing a suit and tie. It looks like the first time he's ever worn a suit and a tie. Just giving away money. Just could not give it away fast enough. And then he runs off to the bathroom. And, yep, you remember?
Yeah, this is a story I know. I still do it to people now.
Yeah.
I inadvertently point it out to people and no one has any idea what I'm saying. But it entertains me.
So he goes off to the bathroom. And we're like, yeah, off to the ATM. Get some more. So Doug's is up more than me at this stage. He goes, I'll give you $25 if you say it to him. He comes back. I'm like, of course, I would have done it for free.
Yeah.
So he comes back and I go, mate, hey, just wipe some off. He's like, what? And Doug's has got...
You got some in the corner of your mouth.
Hey, surely everyone there knew what was going on. Did you get everyone in the table in the joke?
I didn't care. Doug's knew. That was all I cared.
Even now when I'm playing and people get felted and go back, say, lock it up and wander off, come back 5 minutes later.
Straight to the toilet.
I always tell people they've got a bit in the corner of their mouth that they need to dust away.
Well, from that night. So anyway, I think that actually started me off on that night because I was about even, which is why I'm like, oh, great, you're paying me $25 to make a joke that I would have done for free. And then I got up a couple of hundred, who knows. And then we're walking out to get to the car and we seen him coming back the other way?
I don't remember this.
Okay, he's a slightly portly bloke, but... Right. Red as, just beetroot red. And so I think you were calling him Mr. Piggy or something like that at the
Surely
table.
Not.
Because he was pink as. Anyway, as we're leaving, we see him walking along like forlorn. And, you know, because he's obviously done his dough. And Dunks is going, oh, there he is. I wonder what he's doing. He's like, my house was here. It was made of straw.
Is that my underwear?
And they just capped off a brilliant night for us at Crown.
Yeah.
No, it was the best night I've had at the tables.
I still make those remarks to people coming in now.
And it's just, the others, they just don't understand.
Well, especially when you're sitting there for, you know, 6 to 8 hours at a poker table, you've got to find who's in your same sort of, you want to entertain yourself, but you got to know who's the people we are. I wouldn't mind hanging with that one. This guy, fuck that cunt, I'm taking his money. And so throwing out something like that, you know, right, this guy, yep, he's my sense of humour. He's the one that I'm going to be teaming up with at this table.
You make friends really quickly, don't you? Even the guys are taking money off.
Yeah, you do. Some people are not interested in the slightest. Yeah. You make an effort and you get cold-shouldered.
Yeah.
And I think that just spurs me on to give them shit.
Just try and get a response.
Yeah, these you're playing $1, $2 as well with glasses and iPod in. Yeah. Acting like a...
Hood up, sunglasses, big Dre Beats headphones.
Yep.
One, two, $80 buy-in with a $20 rake. Yep. Yeah, you're a professional.
You see them raise and they're like clicking their mouse. Like, oh, shit.
Next stop, $1 million drop.
So anyway, the reason we got here is, and especially because Duncan is, because when you were working at Crown in the mahogany room, I think every fucking Monday at work, Duncan used to bother me like, got any more stories? Yeah. Got any more stories?
I loved your stories. Obviously, yeah, exactly. I loved your stories, particularly when they're named pros or high stakes for holders and go, yeah. I've seen them on TV.
Yeah. And especially, the best thing is, we did our Brownlow Medal podcast and a few came out. Then I forgot that there's probably legal consequences for naming names and giving out specific details.
So at this stage, obviously, it's just you heard through a third party and you can't verify its truthfulness, right?
Yeah, well, I kind of think...
The third party was his eyes.
Also, yeah, and also, I just think that it shouldn't be illegal to tell the truth. So I think
the truth is a...
If you're going to be a cunt in there, because no one's there to find out, well, there's someone like me around there who's going to call you out on your bullshit. So, sucks to be them cunts.
Truth is a defence. And public... What's it called? When the public needs to know or has a right to know or something like that.
Public interest.
Public interest. But, I mean, there are also confidentiality agreements signed and all that kind of shit. But,
you know, what's the worst that can happen? They can't fire you. You're not working anymore.
Exactly.
Right?
And, I mean, everyone from the public I've met is definitely interested. Proof. They get real good. So, yeah, I don't know. Pick a random one. It's hard to start off.
Well, all right. I'll start you off then. Yeah. Phil Ivey.
That's exactly where I know.
Since we started,
and I'm not going to steal your stories, but I do relay your stories as my own. Phil Ivey gets a regular mention.
Good. I'm all for people relaying these stories their own and appropriate them. I'm all about, you know,
as long as they make them better.
Yeah, exactly. They've got to be a bit better.
Sprinkle a bit of salt on it.
Thing is, I got the whole Phil Ivey story, which is funnier, but it doesn't involve anything to do with gambling. It's about the night before and what state I was when I rocked up to work.
I thought you meant the whole Phil Ivey story. I thought you meant the one in London.
Oh, no. Yeah, well, actually, we'll start off with Bill League. Yeah, Bill League, that's his name.
Bill League.
Phil Ivey. Yeah. So
it's Ivy League.
So I'll start from like the night before. That was the first time I went out with my now girlfriend. It was the night before that. And I remember she was a waitress in Mahogany Room. And some of the waitresses were going out for a night. And obviously, most of the waitresses there are Asian. So she's like, oh, no, some of the waitresses going out. Do you want to come out with us? I was like, yeah, all right. And so I said, just tell me where you're going to be and whatever. I'll meet you up there or whatever. And they'll go into Seven Nightclub. They had, like, Asian night or something. So I'm like, all right, I'll meet you there, whatever. I met up with the girls. And obviously, the Mahogany waitresses are pretty good looking. And so there's a huge lineup. And I'm thinking, well, we should be straight in, shouldn't we? I mean, be with all the girls, the good-looking ladies. And so they kind of come in, go to the front. Yeah, you guys come in. Gets to me. Stop. Starts getting the pat down. I'm like, dude, I'm the only white guy at Asian night. Like, what shit am I going to cause here?
That's exactly the problem.
But the thing is, if I do anything wrong, they're going to go, it was the white guy. I'm an easy person to find. Yeah. So I'm like, all right, it's going to be like, this is it. So I rock up in there. The advantage of that is that I can see everywhere. So I lose the girls to the crowd. Like, oh, yeah.
They're all 5 foot.
Yeah, everywhere is tiny.
Just standing over the top of the crowd. Yeah. Like, it's 7 foot.
And they've got like banging R&B playing or whatever else. You can't hear anyone talk. And one of my girlfriends, the other waitress, goes to me, do you want to go to the Coke room? I'm like, huh? Do you want to go to the Coke room? I'm like, fuck yes, I want to go to the Coke room. Like, no wonder Asian night doesn't let anyone else in, man. They got this shit sorted out. So I'm like, sweet. So we go around. There's like this little staircase like around the corner there. So I go around to the staircase. She's like, take your jacket off. I'm like, yeah, this is it. It's Coke. Sweet. They start stuffing the handbags and shit into my sleeves of my jacket. And I'm like, cloakroom. Cloakroom. Like, fuck. So anyway, the time's come to go home. Turns out my girlfriend was driving her ex-boyfriend Skyline. Drove it there. And so we get out
there. She has a type.
Yeah, and we're like, all right, I'll catch taxi home. She's like, nah, sorry, I'll drive. I'm like, you're not fucking driving, man. We're hammered. And so I walk down to St. Kilda Road to try and get a taxi. Next minute, she pulls up next to me. Like, well, fuck it. Jump in. And I get home. And the thing is, when you work at casinos, because they've got lots of staff, and it all depends on how many players are in there, you have tables that are open and close. And what they'll do, if you've got too many staff left over, they'll send people home. And none of the dealers generally want to work, so you write your name down in a book. It's called the Early Out List. And so as tables shut or they've got too many staff, because they roster extra staff on to cover sick leave, because sick leave is huge, like massive. It's the biggest problem they've got. And if not as many people calling sick, then they'll go through the list and they'll send those people home early.
Yep.
And so I'm like, and for day shift, the earliest you can put your name on the list is at 10 a.m. And so people will rock up there, you know, 5 to 10, just put the name down on the list and get out early. Me being hammered, I was like, all right, fuck, I'll get up early, put a name on the list. didn't hear my alarm. I've woken up. It's some random place in Noble Park. And I'm like, where the fuck am I? I look at my clock going, shit. Oh, that's right. I don't have a car. What the fuck am I going to do?
It's all right. Girlfriend's got a skyline.
That's exactly right.
It'll take you 4.5 minutes.
She's got an ex-girlfriend, ex-boyfriend skyline. So I'm on Monash. Fuck! Trying to get in for the early out list. So eventually I get to work. I look at the early out list. I'm like number fucking 6 or something, which for day shift is not good. Like, you know, 6 o'clock earliest, probably you're getting out. And in the old mahogany room, before it got renovated, you had, if you walked in the glass doors, you could go to the right, and there was the baccarat tables on the left-hand side, and the right-hand side, there was some roulette tables and a couple of baccarat tables behind dividers. It was called Pit 28. And that roulette in there was a $10 and a $25, back-to-back, I think. And so if you're on the $25, you do fuck all day. And so I've got set up there, and I'm like, sweet, this is my area. I'm on the out list. I'm not doing nothing. I'm awesome.
Yeah, but with a major hangover behind you, probably exactly. Sweating like peanut butter on a playground.
Like, well, yeah, you got the air vents. I've got mine flat out, and I'm just over the top of it. And in front of there was actually a salon. Like, salons are the private rooms, for those who don't know, where the VIPs will play. And this one was Pit 29. And it just so turns out that's where Phil was playing. And in order to deal in the private rooms to, obviously, the highest games, you've got there's certain codings for dealers, and 9 coding is the highest.
I've just realised, we should explain, in case anybody doesn't know, Phil Ivey is probably...
The Tiger Woods of poker.
The Tiger Woods of poker. Yeah. And it's not just because he's black, it's because he's black.
One of the best in the world.
And looks like him.
He's generally considered to be the best all-round player ever. Even though he's not won the most bracelets,
no, but
he's the most feared
when it comes
poker
to
player.
Cash exactly. games, he's the man.
Yeah,
sorry.
Yeah, and definitely. And so, I was only 8 coders, so I'm not qualified to deal in salons. And I'm like, all right, sweet. I'm going to sit here, wait till my early out. It's going to be a cool day. And then I see Phil Ivey walk past. He's been playing golf. I was like, fuck, man, Phil Ivey. He was like my favorite poker player. You know, I was like, sweet. Yeah, cool. And I see him going to his salon. And next minute, someone comes up and taps me on the shoulder, another dealer. And I was thinking, early out already? Fucking yeah, doing this. Like, sweet. And the pit boss at the time was actually my trainer when I started there. Because I actually first trained in Adelaide and then went to Crown. And so, as an experienced dealer, you just have a refresher course. It's like a few different procedures.
How long were you a dealer for?
In Adelaide, I was a dealer for 2 years, and I worked for about 7 years in Melbourne. So, about 9-10 years, you know, give or take some change. So, he was a pit boss at the time. He's like, Brenton, just walk around spare for a while. And a lot of times, they'll just do that if they like you and you've been doing fuck all. And if they don't want to make someone they don't like go around and do fuck all day, they'll put them on a table that's like a $50 baccarat or something and make them work their nuts off. So, I was like, oh, cheers, Freddie, man. That's good. Yeah, I'll probably be going out. I'll probably be sneaky out. And it turns out, Phil's requested a new dealer. And obviously, the first people I go to are the spares. And I'm 8 code. I mean, I'm sweet. And so Freddie's like, Brenton, yeah, come with me. You got to go into the salon. And I'm like, Freddie, I can't, mate. I'm only 8 coded. He goes, congratulations, Brenton. You're now 9 coded. Like, fuck. I'm not prepared for this, man. Because obviously you got commission. And for those that know, the dealers in baccarat, in the big baccarat, you'll take 5% commission on the banker. And you've got no calculators. So they can bet $277,300. And you've got to work out what 5% of that is, take it out of the bet, and then make the correct payout in like that. And so, not a good first time, hungover on not much sleep going in there. And in this salon, it had like huge floor-to-ceiling double doors that were mahogany, I'm guessing. Fuck knows. And real heavy. So, I pull these doors open and I walk in there and he's got his back to me at one of the far tables. And straight away, he just whips around and just looks at me and goes... It just gives me the stare. And I'm sort of like...
And for anybody else, the Phil Ivey stare is exactly. famous.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I'm just like, sort of looking, shrug my shoulders, I turn around, walk out. I'm like, hey, Freddie, he doesn't want me. He's like, all right, just go jump on the baccarat table. And so, all right, on the roulette table that I was already on. All right, sweet. Jump on there. And new dealer, this Asian chick, Cindy, goes in there. She's dealing, he seems pretty happy. And they come out. I get another tap on the shoulder. I'm like, early out, maybe? Nah. Phil said, bring me that other dealer. I was like, fuck. And so I walk in there. He's just got to hide him. And the thing is, I've heard stories about him at a poker table, completely different to what my experience is at a baccarat table. But the first thing, like, I was looking disheveled, bloodshot eyes. First thing, he turns around and looks at me and goes, who the fuck cut your hair, man? And I'm like, no one, man.
What's the point?
Yeah, so that's long. And so I walk down. And I'm sitting down there, and he plays playing player because he doesn't like playing banker because fucking why not?
Why not?
Yeah, and he's like, pass the cards out to him, and he's like, yeah, just turn the cards over, man. I'm like, all right, so I turned the.
So he doesn't
want to
sweat or anything. Just wants a quick gamble.
He wants a squeeze for the win.
Yep.
Me, I'm hungover as fuck. And so pass the next card out. dude, just turn away, man. Just don't even worry. Hold on, just turn away. Oh, yeah, just turn away. Yeah, turn away again.
Yep.
Next hand.
Turn away.
Fuck. He's like, dude, I fucking told you how many times. Just turn away. He's like, are you fucking high? Like, look at your eyes. You're a fucking stone, man. That's why I'm just sitting there just copping it. And the thing is, every other dealer that he hated, he just kick him out. Just like, give him a spray and just, there you go, new dealer. Me, man, he just sat there and fucking blasted me the whole time. And I'm hungover as fuck. And then, like, he goes on a... somebody, my time to go on a break. And so I'm like, all right, I'm going to break. He's like, yeah, go smoke another fucking joint, man. They're like, all right. So coming back. And that was about 6 o'clock. The craps table opened up. He loves playing craps. And so he'd go out there, play craps, then come back in and play baccarat. But the thing is, I was giving him a fucking hiding. And he'd go out, he'd play craps, make, like, you know, couple hundred thousand dollars, come back, and I just take it off him in a few hands. I don't want to, man. I'll fucking, this is my idol. And I'm just being abused and fucking tormented by him. And I'm talking to his bodyguard was there when he's out playing craps. And
Phil have a bodyguard.
Yeah, he had a bodyguard that he brought over by himself.
Well, I guess he's carrying around a lot of cash.
I've never seen him with a bodyguard in the poker room. Yeah. Enough.
Yeah. Probably around somewhere.
I've seen different country. Through with 50 k's worth of chips through the food court.
Antonio is his own bodyguard.
Yeah, that's fair. Point.
Yeah,
sorry.
True.
I interrupted you.
That's what we want interruptions. We let him go where they go. Where
that's
they
the
go.
Idea.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, yeah, up to. Yeah, I walk in there and I'm sitting down. He's going to play craps and his bodyguard, big, huge black fella. Like, he was nice as fire, man. He was a really, really good dude. And he's like, yeah, don't worry about him, man. He's all right. He's harmless, man. He's all bark. He's not much bait. I'm like, no shit, it's your fucking job, man, isn't it? Like, you're the fucking bite, man.
You're the Rottweiler.
What's the saying? You don't buy a dog and expect to bark as well?
You don't buy a dog and bark yourself. That's
yeah.
right.
Yeah. But I was thinking, this guy's coming to Australia. We don't have guns and shit here. He's probably bored as shit. Got nothing to do. He's like, nah, fuck it. I'll get this little dealer, stir him up, and then I got to go over there and clock him or something like that. And so after, must have been 6:30, it's just about the end of my shift. Then I started giving him a huge run, and he's like, on the layout, you got your maximums and your minimums, but on baccarat, you have a differential, which is the total of the bets on the banker hand have to be within a certain limit of the total bets on the player hand. So for mainly baccarat, for he had 250,000 differential. So if you had 200,000 on banker, you're allowed to put up to 450 on player. Yeah. And what do you do? He didn't want to touch chips if he won, so he like just pay it out there and just let it ride, just double
also,
up.
Also, he was he was bothered about
superstitious.
Oh wow.
And so he's just playing, just let it ride, and so he's called to the max. And as soon as I start giving him all on end, I'm his best mate. Yeah. He's like, "You're all right, man. You're all right." And then took it all back off him. He's like, nope, fuck this. He's like, I haven't seen any fucking black people in here, man. You got any black people in Australia? What is this bullshit? And then he's like, I want a black dealer. And then we're all
saying, that might be a challenge.
Well, we're thinking about it. We're like, fuck. I don't think we've got any black dealers. Shit. So we're thinking about it. We're like, the only guy we can think of is this dude, Dan, who's Sri Lankan. But like, he's ghetto. And he has
ghetto Sri Lankan.
He has a shoe collection and like a formidable shoe collection. Just all Jordans. He was like the type of person that lines up for Jordans and shit. Ahead, so we're like, well, you can probably sneak him in, you know what I reckon. And so
that's like justifying Imelda Marcos coming in. He had a shoe collection. Pretty much. He had a shoe collection, you're too.
Is it an Italian job? Mos Def?
Most deaf.
Was it the Italian job? I'm pretty sure it was the Italian job. He's got a shoe room.
Yeah.
A room for shoes.
The other one was his turtle in Entourage.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
He's got the shoe. He's white.
Yeah.
Yeah, so at this stage, we're struggling to think Brooklyn. Of people that are black with a lot of shoes, right?
Yep.
Anyway.
And so we're like, Dan, he's all we got, so we're going with Dan.
Yep.
And so we finally someone flags down Dan. We've got him. He comes in, sits down. Starts dealing and feels like, my man, all right, finally, we've got some brothers in the house, sweet, all right. And so he starts dealing.
Feels good for a read then.
Yeah. That's the worst thing. When you're actually dealing baccarat, he'll stop and look at you, trying to get a read. He's like, dude, I don't know where these cards are, man. I don't know. Wouldn't know what you're trying to find out.
Even if you did.
Phil Ivey, the greatest poker player with the best capability of reading someone and can't tell the fucker across the table, Dina name, Sri Lankan. And not African American. For fuck's sake.
He's probably close enough for it.
Yeah. He gave him a hiding anyway. Then he's like, nah, new dealer. And we're like, fuck.
Who else have we got?
And the spare supervisor was on, the person giving him breaks. And so Dan, he's got up and he's gone to the supervisor, gone, I think he wants a latte dealer. the waitress has heard him say, I think he wants a latte.
Oh, no.
And so he's sitting down there. All of a sudden, she's rushing out this coffee, bringing it down for him. Puts it down. Oh, there you are, sir. He's like, the fuck is this shit, man? I'm not allowed to drink fucking beer anymore. And I'm just sitting there going, oh, my fucking God. Like,
fucking useless. I can't open this. Yeah. Soft hand, see?
So, yeah, that's the start of my Phil stories. That was the first time I had to deal with Phil.
And is he still your hero?
No. Honestly,
he's a fucker now, right?
Everybody, yeah. I think in dealer circles, he's known as being an arse.
Honestly, he is my least favourite person to deal to on the entire planet.
I remember you telling me a story on one occasion of Phil taking a pounding in the mahogany room and asking for a change of dealer, a change of table, a change of chairs, etc., etc.
Yeah.
And then it got to the point where suddenly he was told, no more changes.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you remember? I remember the story.
It's happened a few times, but you go for it.
Okay, so the story, as I remember you telling it, was Phil's getting a hiding.
Allegedly.
He's like, new fucking cards. I'm like, yes, Phil, new cards.
Yeah.
Change the cards out. And he's still getting a hiding. They're like, new fucking dealer. Yes, Phil, new dealer. Dealer's out, dealer's in.
Yeah.
He goes, all right, I want a new fucking table. Still getting the hiding. All right, Phil, no worries. New table. And he goes, and I want this fucker out of here, pointing to the pit boss. He's like, all right, we can change him, but no one comes out. And he goes, and I want these fuckers out of there, pointing to these Asian guys. Yep. No Phil.
Yeah.
No Phil, yeah.
What do you fucking mean? Do you remember it now?
No, I don't ring a bell.
Okay. He goes, what you're spending tonight, they spend in one hand, they stay where they are.
Yeah.
He's like, you are the biggest fish until there's a bigger one.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's before they gave him a private room. Because he didn't used to like playing in private rooms. He used to like playing around people and that. He may play Baccarat, craps at the main table.
Yeah.
But he'd have a personal limit. Because if you're a high roller, you can actually have a personal limit where they tell surveillance, you can go to any table and play with your personal limit.
Yep.
So as long as the dealer knows, and if the dealer's not quite good enough, then they'll say, this dealer, get the fuck out of here. Get someone else in to deal with this guy's personal limit. So he had that. So he'd be around all the tables and have his own personal limit of those tables. That's what he used to do. So that can make complete sense that there's something definitely there he would have done. It happens lots of times. I remember another famous poker player's brother coming into roulette table.
That really limited him. You see, you know who he's talking about. I know who he's talking about.
Did he have a deep run in the main event once?
Yes, very deep. Very, very deep.
Yeah. Did he make a complete arse of himself on ESPN?
Can you
pass us a sugar? Thanks. Sorry, go on.
Sorry, Tony.
And so these couple of Chinese men are playing baccarat and are playing roulette. And the thing is, they're not wheel trackers. They're just put as much chips on the ladder as you can and have fun. That's what they do. So I'll sit there with stacks and they'll just drop around all over the table. And obviously, if you've ever been to most Asian countries, they're packed, man. And your general considerations of personal space aren't...
They're good breeders.
Yeah. Your considerations of personal space aren't the same.
There's no shame in bumping somebody out of the way.
Exactly right. Lineups, myth.
Yeah.
So anyway, they're playing, they're reaching over people, and that's just the way it goes in casinos. That's just the way it is. And so one guy comes in, he's like, persuading, and the guy sort of like leans over him to place his bets. And the thing is, the ball's already spun, so when the ball's spun, it's just fucking chaos.
Mayhem. Yeah. Quick.
Yeah. It's arms everywhere, and so he's pushed him back, and he's gone, mate, don't fucking lean over and touch me. You don't give a fuck how much money you got. And the supervisor goes, excuse me, mate, we care how much money you got. Yeah. He's going to stay there. Yeah.
I've got a question for you, Brendan.
Yep.
Brendan, we mentioned Phil Ivey's the Tiger Woods of poker. Now, Tiger Woods is also allegedly a notorious gambler.
Mm-hmm.
Did you have any run-ins with the Tiger Woods of golf?
I never got to deal with Tiger Woods, but he'd come in, but he'd mainly play craps and play a bit of blackjack. I don't deal craps, I deal blackjack, but...
I remember when he was here and they were like, I think he was staying at Crown.
Yeah.
And they're saying, do you think he's going to gamble? I'm like, well, he's half black, half Asian.
That's where that affair first came out, was at Crown.
It was too.
Yeah,
well,
yeah.
The story I heard, and this is obviously purely anecdotal
this one is actually anecdotal.
Yeah.
Okay. Was that when he was over, and I think it was the Australian Masters or the Australian Open, in Melbourne. Like, and it was that weekend when just after that trip when it all started coming out and the security footage from Crown started appearing with different blondes following him in.
Yeah.
But he won that. He was paid a $2 million appearance fee.
Yeah.
First prize was like 300 grand.
It was about 100 or something.
Yeah.
Like.
Yeah.
It wasn't much.
But his appearance fee was all over. I can't remember who Premier of Victoria was at the time, but is it value for money and all the rest of it?
Yeah.
And he smashed the first round, smashed the second round. The third round, he had a really poor round. and came back in the fourth.
Yep.
And the rumour was on the night after the second round, on the Friday night, he dropped a couple of million in Crown. So that was a little bit on his mind on the Saturday.
Yep.
And all this talk afterwards was of the value of having Tiger Woods here. He actually left the country with less than he came with.
Well, I tell you what, once he got home, he left with a lot less too. Yeah.
And then about he obviously half. Got fucked another 500 afterwards.
Yeah, well, I didn't hear that specific incident, but it wouldn't surprise me if some of that happens, because the same thing happened with redheaded tennis player. He used to date Sharapova.
Oh.
American dude.
Oh, Andy Roddick.
Yeah, he's all redheaded.
Isn't
he? No. Not really. Well,
actually, he might be. He's always got a cap on, with the sweat dripping off the beak of the
but
cap.
I always heard he's all right. He's a nice guy.
He was a poker player, right? Yeah. Him and Sharapova would play poker.
Yeah, yeah. They come in and play blackjack as well in the mahogany room. Yeah. But he was all right. It was like a standard kind of jock, more or less. Yeah. So he could be a bit of a cunt when he's tired and losing money, as you know, I probably can be too. So yep. You understand
briefly
that.
World number one.
Yeah, exactly. But before, when he went deep in Australian Open, he was at Crown until like 2, 3am before he played to play that game, and he lost the next day. But apparently, the funniest thing was when the Australian Open first started, it was on the same time as the Aussie Millions.
Yep.
And the winner of Aussie Millions would actually win more than the winner of the Australian Open.
Yep.
So someone who spends their entire life like, fuck girls, fuck school, fuck everything, I'm playing tennis, and then dedicate their life to it. They sweat their balls off out in the fucking Australian sun in the middle of summer. You got some jackass who gets to jerk off and play online poker, gets to win more money than them. It's a cool aircraft from basement of Crown.
Yep. Well, that year was probably Gus Hansen too, I reckon.
Heads up against Gobbo, wasn't it?
Could have been. It was a while ago. I remember that Gus won it, and Crown couldn't have been happier.
It was the back of the book on every hand counts or whatever it is, and he relates, you know, he opened every hand, because I'm sure his head's up against Gobbo.
Yeah,
that's right. Rings a bell. Yeah.
I remember walking through Crown and seeing him and David Benjamin, I think.
Oh, you were a big fan of David Benjamin,
yeah,
I remember.
Yeah, he was awesome. Yeah.
I remember when the Australian Open was at the same time, the first sort of person where I was went, oh, they're famous, was actually David Nalbandian.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And I was dealing on a roulette table in
the only Argentinian without an Argentinian name, right?
Yeah, pretty much, so, yeah.
He's a mad poker player too, I've got a feeling. Nalbandian? Really? I got a feeling it's him or somebody else who almost gave up tennis to play poker.
There's a few of them that are sponsored by poker stars, like Aussie Nadal, Boris Becker.
And there's some poker players that gave up tennis.
Yeah. Gus.
So he was at the roulette table. There was a time where, for some reason, there was a bit of animosity towards him in the media. It must have been maybe had something to do with Leighton Hewitt, that spat, and they're both wankers, really. But anyway, he was sitting there. He's right next to the wheel, got his missus in between, he's sitting on his lap. And I'm spinning the ball, and I'm looking at him going, oh, fucking Nalbandian, you know, he's just got a cack hiding in the media, and obviously not a fan just based on that. And he's sitting there, he's like, hello. And I was spinning the wheel, like, yeah, g'day, mate, how you going? And I go back to, you know, chip up, whatever. Like 2 minutes later, how are you? I'm like, yeah, I'm all right, guy. He was the nicest guy, the second nicest guy I've ever met. The other one's James Blake, the black tennis player.
Yeah.
He is the nicest guy I've ever met, ever. At a table. I remember watching when he...
You heard the story about James Blake. Sorry, you heard the story about James Blake a couple of weeks ago.
No.
It was the US Open, I think, and he was outside a bar in Brooklyn or Queens or something in New York, waiting for the car to come and pick him up.
Yeah.
And he was suddenly rushed by security, tackled to the ground and arrested.
Jesus!
Because they mistook him for somebody who had just robbed somebody else down the street.
A black male.
And they figured, black guy wearing white trainers, he's our man. And they just flattened James Blake.
Remember that movie, Don't Be a Menace to the South Central while drinking? Yeah. He was charged with being black on a Friday night.
Yeah. But that was, that was the nice people that I met. Anyway, you guys go with the story. I'm going to try and figure this one out. Cross off what I've already got. Yeah.
Since we're on poker players then, I thought my other favourite poker story was when I introduced Duncan to Crown.
So, let's go through poker. I've got poker.
I think because, like, we met at work and you're like, oh, I like poker. I reckon you might have played 10 hours of poker in your life before we
quite possibly.
Close to what you thought.
I did go to Crown with you thinking this is the cost of a lesson.
I was
very mentally in that position. This is the cost of my lesson.
So I remember we were sitting down and playing a little bit, and I think the limits were 2-3. And you put out a $6 bet, which is the minimum. And it's call. And then,
this isn't embarrassing at all, by the way. You carry on.
No. Because I know it's not embarrassing, because I reckon I've told it in your presence about 8 or 9 times so far.
And you still live to tell it again.
Yep. You know what? I like it more each time.
I've got one to tell about your pocket fours afterwards.
Oh, I still remember that. Anyway, so it's got, I don't know, 12 callers, which is good on a 10-handed table. flops come whatever, and I think you put out another bet of 15, 16, call, and somebody's got it, and you go, oh, I've got fucking aces. I'm like, yeah, ducks are no shit. And you're like, but everybody called. I'm like, yeah, because you bet the minimum. Like, but I want everyone to play because I've got aces. I'm like, no, you want
one or two.
You know, you only want one or two people because you know you're still favourite, but you're not 50%.
Yes,
you're not favourite against the
I'm
table.
I'm the most likely winner, but I'm not a likely winner.
Correct.
Yeah.
So I think I don't know 8 or 9 hands later, gets around to Doug's 35. Like, dude, everyone folds. You're like, well, I had aces again. I'm like, no shit. Everyone knows you had aces again.
I also remember on one occasion in those early days having pocket kings and the flop coming with two kings on it. And I checked, Jesus. And the guy next to me got super aggro and bet. And I check called each street until shoving at the end. And you turned to me and said, don't show him. And I looked at you like, what? What do you mean, don't show him? He said, I know you've got quads. Don't show him. I'm like, motherfucker.
See, I imagine, like, because I'm not a professional player by any stretch of the imagination. I played a lot of home games and that's it. And I imagine somebody who's just new, you've gone, holy shit, how can he tell that?
Yeah.
Now, if you were sitting at that table, it just screams, doesn't it?
Oh,
you can see it.
You just get used to certain characteristics. So I've been playing...
You notice the patterns.
I've been playing twice a week on average, probably since then.
4 or 5 years,
It's probably more than four. I've done the last 5 years of the World Series.
Yeah.
So I've been playing a long time and... You know, it's different at different tables with different people, but once you start knowing people, knowing their tendencies, sometimes you're just so in tune.
Yeah.
You can feel and just sense the air change. You know exactly where they're at. And it's times like that where you make the call with Jack High.
Yeah.
With 100% confidence that you're absolutely right.
Yeah. Sometimes it's just in your head, it's like, I know I'm right. I have to be right. There's no other explanation.
Yeah. His story does not make sense.
But you get used to that as well. Because I remember once we were playing somewhere I bet in somebody's folder and I said, oh, would you have something like Queen 4? And he turns around and goes, oh my God, I had exactly Queen 4.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah.
Yeah.
And like he was really impressed, but I'm like, well, no, I guess. I could have said Jack 6. It's the same fucking
same
hand.
Same difference.
I just happened to guess the right hand. That's not impressive. That's just ballpark.
Well, the other one the one that you do get right where you can name a card is where you know someone's open with a big pocket pair and it's been a call and it's a four flush board and they jam out and you go, I know you've got the King of Hearts.
Yeah.
I know you've got it. Yeah. You know, how do you know that? You know.
That's why I think poker is a very like data sort of intensive game, if that makes sense, where it's about sitting there and getting through the hands and having the information stored in your head. And I find the more you do that, then the more tuned those instincts come where you're almost like, it's almost like we get in the zone in another sport or a physical activity, but it's the same principle of playing on instinct, not on thought, if that makes sense.
There's some poker writer who called it thin slicing.
Right.
There's a great story to go with it, and I'll bugger up the story, but it's just that you understand things that you just see them. You don't know why you understand it, but all the data's stored up there.
Yeah.
The story he told was, I think it was with the Guggenheim, they spent 18 months authenticating this new statue. They went through, make sure all the documents are good, and just every accountant they had just went through, it's good, it's $20-odd million or whatever. And I'm probably buggering up the details, it probably wasn't the Guggenheim, but you get the idea.
It's not the first time on this podcast.
Yeah. truth enough.
That's
what we go for. Anyway, so they've done all their due diligence, and they put it out there, and they've opened up their first day, and within half an hour, they had 4 art critics going, it's a fake. And they said, what do you mean it's a fake? Like,
they just had the nose for it.
It's a fake.
Yeah.
And they were right. But they just saw it and went, no, it's not right.
Yeah.
And it's that thin slice. That's how it came around. It's poker's just the same thing. You see somebody bet and goes, no, that's not right. That doesn't make sense.
Until you start value-owning yourself.
Yeah.
Because the next stage of reading somebody with absolute clarity is convincing yourself with it and then start ignoring the other bits of information.
Yeah.
Yep.
And then you start making really stupid plays and really stupid calls and make yourself look a complete tit.
Yeah.
And it's bad enough when you make a bad call or a bad bet at a poker table. The worst thing for me is I can feel myself going red with embarrassment. And that's really fucking hurts.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tell the Pocket Four story. Because I can remember it. I want to see how good my
memory is. Recollection of the Pocket Four story, I can even remember which table it was. I think it was table 3, which...
Right near the ramp?
Used to be next to the disabled ramp to get up to the bar before that bar went through a few other iterations. So we're in that little cubby, which was notorious for never getting drink service.
Yeah. It was a fun table too, that night. It was a fun table.
Yeah, it was. But there was a piss kid on it. He was exceedingly drunk. He was, I'm sure it's probably his 18th birthday. And you've bet, and he's 3-bet, and everyone else has called, and you've demonstrated extreme discipline by folding your pocket fours because you know he's got aces.
It was,
You were highly confident he had aces. And you're like, I know I'm beat, I'm throwing them away. And as soon as the flop came down with at least 1-4, possibly 2-4s, the kid jams out of turn. He's shaking like the Titanic, he's all over the place. And you knew exactly where he was. He couldn't get his chips in quick enough, and you were kicking yourself for a week. Because the implied odds, enormous.
I can remember even more details about that hand. That's how much it stayed with me. All the action was pre-flop. And I was under the gun. He was in the cutoff.
He was to your left, wasn't he?
To my right. He was like 3 seats to my right.
Okay.
So he was, I don't think he was the button. So under the gun, cutoff is the one next to the button. So he's second last to act. Cards are dealt and I got pocket fours. And I've gone to put, I think there's a bet in front of me. So I might not have been, anyway. So I think the bet's like $10. And I've gone to put my call.
Yep.
I'm just set mining. And he's gone 30. I'm like, dude, that's way out of turn. And like he's just got. He may as well have said, "I've got aces."
Well, he did.
No,
to another poker player at the table. That's what it sounded
exactly
like.
Exactly right. That's all I heard was, "I've got aces."
You were thinking to yourself, "This reminds me of Duncan."
So I look at my pocket four. So I'm like, "Well, he's got aces. I've just saved myself $10." Anyway, so it gets around to him like, okay, now you bet 30 and you get 2 or 3 callers and the flop comes jack 4-4. So anyway, it's not his turn to act and he's gone all in, like $200. And I've got him covered. And I'm sitting there, I just look at Dunks. Like, they settle him down, say, no, just wait.
Yeah.
Check. 200, fall. And then he's gone, I had aces. I'm like, yeah, no fucking shit. Yeah. I look at Dunks. Dunks is going, I'm going to go for a cigarette. I'm like, I'm fucking going too. I remember nobody at the table believed me.
Would it hurt if I told you now that was one of the highlights of my poker career?
I read him perfectly.
You did?
I did everything right.
No.
No, I did everything right.
You actually didn't look at the implied odds.
Maybe.
Which were fucking enormous.
They were post-flop.
Which was his entire stack and the other caller's money.
What I didn't get was, I've just got to walk away for a minute.
Yeah, you were still.
I'll miss my blinds, I don't care. I'll pay him when I come back. And when he came back to the table, I said, I have pocket fours. Anyone goes, I said it before I left. And the other guy said, we had a chat, we don't believe you. I'm like, why would I lie? What have I got to gain? And besides, I guarantee you, nobody else had a four.
Yeah.
Like, how can I be that confident? And yeah. It's weird at a poker table that people just assume you're lying.
And the odd thing is, and
telling the truth is the best bluff you've got.
Well, I read Matt Moore was one of my heroes. Grown up as a poker player, not grown up as a child. Grown up as a poker player.
You're 38, but still got some growing up to do.
And Matt Moore's blogs on 2+2, More Money, awesome. And so on. And it was a great story. It's obviously dried up in the last couple of years, but he talks about at a poker table, if you ask someone a direct question, people are inherently wired to tell the truth.
Yep.
So even though you're at a poker table and you are trying to often bluff with your bet sizing and your mannerisms and so on, if you ask a direct question, people either tell the truth or they don't say anything because they're inherently wired to tell the truth.
Yeah.
And the example of you saying, I've got pocket fours, that's not a lie. Because instinctively, you naturally tell the truth as a human being.
I tell my body language, told it, wow. But I just didn't understand it. Like, why would you think I was? I mean, yes, it is that the odds are against having pocket fours when there's two out there. But what do I have to gain?
And why would I make such an absurd statement with the possibility
that somebody else goes
seven other players around this table, so 14 other cards, so there's a 33% chance that one of you fuckers had a four.
And speaking about lying, it reminds me of another story, not to do with poker, but when I first started...
Hey, we're just filling the gaps in between your mahogany stories.
Fair enough. In between, the first job I had was at LA Casino dealing blackjack. Well, I was a blackjack dealer first. And when you do that, you learn the minor games as well. So you got major games, which will have a difference in your pay rise. So up to the 3 major games. So the majors are Baccarat, Blackjack, Roulette, Craps, Pai Gow, and Poker. And so you'll get paid.
When you say poker, do you mean poker or like Caribbeans?
No, no. Poker, like poker. Like poker, Hold'em. Down in the poker room. Yeah.
Manila,
yeah. Those fucking.
All the Greeks.
Greeks down there. Yeah, exactly.
Don't deal Manila.
Don't get me started on the European gamblers. That's probably next podcast. Yeah, what's going with that?
Yeah, so my home games so used to be all Turks and Greeks.
Yeah,
awesome history lessons.
So yeah. the major games.
Those are the major games. So when you first learn, you will get your one game because every time they give you a new major game, up to three, they have to give you a pay increase.
Okay.
And so on your first game, they teach you the minors, which will be like Caribbean Stud Poker and Big Wheel and
Casino War
and shit like that.
Is that real?
Yeah.
That was a joke in
Chevy Chase,
Europe, Vegas Vacation.
Yeah, Vegas Vacation, yeah.
Like war. And I didn't know they really play that.
They did.
Stupid. Yep.
Well, it's Baccarat for white people.
Exactly. That's exactly what it is.
You can play red and black on the black. Anyway.
Yeah. So I obviously grew up in the country. First, I might have been in a casino five times. I would have been those assholes at $5 blackjack sitting on 12 and shit like that. I had no idea what I was doing.
I remember going behind Josh, he's hitting on 17, A6. You know.
I got this figured out.
And got a 2.
Yeah, my experience with casinos is like Casino the movie and Goodfellas and shit like that. And so I'm like, man.
Vegas Vacation.
Yeah. And like, you know, obviously, people know where Adelaide Oval is and the casinos across the river from there. Yeah. And I used to live in North Adelaide, like pretty much on just off O'Connell Street for the whole time I lived there. So I'd walk to work and walk home. And so in my head, I was like, man, some shifty fuckers in here. I can't tell anyone the truth. Don't want anyone to know anything about me. And so from the start, I just flat out lie to everyone. But the thing is, I wouldn't keep the same lie. I just had a little game where I just make up a new lie for every different person. Just see how I come up with this. So much like a bullshit with
it's
it.
It's like trying to pull girls as 18-year-olds. Really, my name's Algernon. Exactly. I'm a rocket scientist.
That's probably why I was so good at it.
The greatest lie ever told. Of course I'll respect you in the morning.
That's definitely my phone number. So anyway,
I don't have herpes.
That's a war condom.
You can't catch it twice.
That would be the truth for me.
Lies for her.
See, he's still lying now.
So yeah, I'm just terrified that someone's going to follow me home and bash me up, whatever. Bullshit. No one ever bothers to do that, man. No one cares that much. And so anyway, this one couple that played Caribbean Stud. They were a lovely old Asian couple, and one of the first people that I dealt to, and he's like, his missus was playing Caribbean and he was sitting behind and he was just sort of real chatty. Like, there were people in there every weekend, but not gambling addicts. They just went in there, had their fun after dinner or whatever, and they'd go to a show or whatever they were doing. And I had no idea about this at the time. There were just random people at my table. And so he's like, hey, Brent, how are you? Yeah, I'm good, mate. How you doing? Always have a chat to everyone. And through the course of his missus playing Baccarat, he's like, hey, so what do you do? I'm like, oh, I'm studying accounting. He's like, oh, really? I'm like, yeah. I'm like, oh, I own accounting business. So interesting. You know, what are you studying now? You know, I'm doing accounting for retards, more or less. Accounting 101, for managers, and
so you're making it up. You're singing yourself.
I just threw out like general ledgers and journals and shit like that. And he's like, oh yeah. And he's like, where do you live? I'm like, oh, I live in North Adelaide, like just off O'Connell Street, which is actually true. And he's like, oh, my firm's on O'Connell Street. Yeah, it's like just around the corner from where I live. It turns out this guy's a regular. So he's in there every weekend.
So yeah, so keep the lie.
Every weekend, time. I've got to fucking keep this lie going because he's such a nice guy that I just don't want to front up.
Do you know what the best thing would be? If you started studying accounting just so you could keep the lie going.
Well, the worst part is that he'd be more up to date with what my course was at than I was. This is like 2 years into working at Adelaide Casino and he's still a regular. I'm still keeping up this bullshit lie.
And he's like, oh, you must be up to...
Yeah, he's like, oh, so you must be doing exams now. You work a night shift. It's like, yeah, that's not... I'm like, fuck, am I? All right. Like, yeah, exams.
Oh, how quick, fake you.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. And he's obviously knows the course inside out and said people coming through. And it's getting to the point where I'm pretty confident he's going to offer me a job because he's counting down to where my thing's finishing. And I'm just like, fuck, what am I going to do, man? Like, I've got no idea.
Frank Abagnale. Just fucking do it.
Yeah. I quit, went to Melbourne.
You should be a pilot and all the rest of it.
I was thinking about it because I was studying at the time international business and I had only done accounting for retards. That was it. Just
accounting
like,
for retards. Yeah.
Like my lecturer or my tutor was so lazy, he'd come in and he'd take a photo of the class. This is before digital. This is like the old school fucking paper box ones, you know? you get from a pharmacy.
Oh, right, the disposable cameras.
Yeah, he'd have a week's worth, and he'd just chuck them in at the end of the week to his developer, and he'd print it out so he'd know who was at class.
His attendance.
Yeah. I'm guessing he got high a lot.
I used to work in supermarkets back in the UK when we still sold disposable cameras.
Yep.
And the guy in my night shift figured out how he could take a picture on the disposable camera without opening the cartons.
So how many shots of his dick did he have?
Just one. Just one of every fucking camera on display. So for a period of months, people go away, do their family photos of them in Benedict.
Ah, the internet. It's given us so much greatness. Sneezing pandas, planking, even the podcast you're listening to right now. Also, eBay. Did you know 90% of items sold on eBay are brand new? The best in beauty and health, things for baby and toys for all. So much of it is brand new, and you can get it for less on eBay. Download the eBay app now for the best deals delivered fast.
Storm or the Costa del Sol or whatever, the kids jumping into the pool. Yeah, imagine how many divorces there were where the husband gets it and think, why am I taking pictures of some other guy's dick? Or the wife gets it and goes, why are you putting your dick on?
I'm just waiting to see the priest walk in and buy them all going, it's got to be more than one dick. It's got to be more than one dick on here.
This is the poor bastard developing and was like, I've seen this one before.
It's recognisable. Or, that's my boyfriend's. He works at Sainsbury's.
This is like Bono automatic uploading his new album to YouTube or iTunes or whatever.
To the iPhone, yeah.
It's like, take this with you.
Sorry, it's reminded me, have you ever seen Reno 911?
Yeah.
It just reminded me of a joke out of that. It's an American satire cop show.
Yep.
Reno, sheriff's in Reno. Anyway, and one of the guys comes in. He's all, fuck this. Somebody put their fucking dick in my peanut butter. And he hands it to the lieutenant. And he goes like this. Opens it up. Jonesy, what's on? What the fuck, Jonesy? Anyway. So how about this? Have you ever dealt to a former prime minister? Is that random enough?
Oh, yes. That's very random. I have. Bob Hawke. That's some of my stories are more interesting than funny. Bob Hawke, seriously, one of the nicest people that I've ever met. But he came in. That's another time that I was spare. And I see this silver, almost yellow wig walking through. And, like, everyone recognizes that wig.
He's about 5 foot one.
5 foot one, exactly. I'm looking at it going, silver hair, look at that. It's got to be Bob.
Like you know Bob Hawke, sure.
Oh, no, yeah, Bob Hawke. I never realised he was 5 foot one. Or he was...
He's small, yeah.
Wow, I mean, he's probably 5 foot four at his best.
Yeah.
Now he's probably 90 now, but close enough.
Yeah, close, yeah. I think Hazel passed away.
Yeah,
she?
Years ago, yeah.
This is when she was alive. She was just released a book. She was on a book tour and she was having an appearance in Bendigo, I think.
I think they were separated.
Anyway. And he was going to Melbourne, going to stop over there and then go to Bendigo because he's getting pretty old. And he comes in, he's just walking around, just didn't announce, just walked in. People's like, fuck, Bob, all right. Comes out, Bob, hey, what are you doing this afternoon? What would you like? And whatever, make sure to take care of. He's like, I just want to play some blackjack. It's like, all right.
Don't do the impressions.
He called a pontoon, because back in the day, he's always called a pontoon, you know what I mean?
Pontoon's blackjack without the tens.
Without the tens, yeah. You get paid on 21 straight away.
Yeah, I've got a story about that as well. Remind me afterwards.
So anyway, I'll Mr. Hawks come in.
He's come in and he's like, I'll play some pontoon. And so he's like, oh yeah, so, you know, what would you like it to be? $5. It's like, all right.
He'd start trying to make a quid.
Exactly. But I'm spare walking around and I'm thinking, please be me. Come on, Brenton. And yeah, all right, sweet. Yeah, I did it, Bob.
And so like, you hadn't just come in on a Nissan Skyline of the girlfriend with a hangover that night, though.
This time, I wish we had a beer together or something. I would have beat his ass in the skull.
No, you wouldn't have.
Yeah. Oh, yeah,
not even his age.
But he comes in playing $5 pontoon, but he's gone a bit, like, he's just, memory's not there at all. And so he's sitting there dealing, and he's playing like three boxes, and got a private table, mind you, at $5. So no one else allowed to play. People just sort of watching. And he's like, coming on, oh yeah, I think I'll hit on this one. And he go, all right, yep, nah, sit, go to the next box. What have I got? What have I got back there, mate? You got 20 there, Bob. Oh no, I'll sit on that.
Good choice.
Already sat on the one. Yeah, cool. What about this one? You've got the old Tom Mix. Oh, the old Tom Mix, eh? Ah, And he's like, hello.
So remember you were telling it to us. You're like, I just thought he's like Pop.
Yeah, exactly.
He started doing all the rhyming slang.
Yeah, all rhyming slang. Like Tom Mix's old school rhyming slang for a six, like a cricket, when he hit a six. Yep. And he's like, I'm like, yeah, you got the old Tom Mix. He's like, oh, the old Tom Mix. Oh, yeah, right. And he starts chatting about cricket. You like cricket, do you? Yeah, hit plenty of those in the backyard at Nan's. Isn't there, where are you from? Oh, I'm from Broken Hill. That's a good labour town. Very good labour town down there.
Yeah.
So I had a chat to him. At that time, I was studying psychology. And he's like,
is this the truth or were you lying and having to pretend?
No, this was actually the truth. Yeah.
Okay.
And she goes, all right, Brenton. Well, what I'll tell you, if you ever need anything, you just ring my offices in Sydney and you let me know. And he's taken down all my details in his book, written it down, just because I gave him a good night at blackjack. So I wouldn't mind Bob Hawke coming on the podcast. All I got to do is ring up his Sydney offices and say, Bob, not quite what you were talking about, buddy, but a deal's a deal, champ.
Love you to a guest appearance.
Yep. A deal's a deal, champ.
And you asked him too about the infamous... Because he had Guinness.
Right.
He had a Guinness World Record.
Yeah, he had the Guinness World Record for sculling a pint.
I think it was a yard glass.
Yeah, he did have the yard glass, but someone beat him. No, either someone beat him on the yard glass or someone beat him on the pint.
One of those, because I know all those records now, Guinness don't keep them anymore, which is a bit silly because they're Guinness.
Yeah.
Because there's responsible.
Yeah, it's responsible service like, and
killing people and shit.
Someone would have drowned themselves trying to drink a swimming pool of Guinness and or something.
Probably did.
Yeah. Because he was a Rhodes Scholar.
Rhodes, yeah.
At Oxford.
Yeah.
With Bill Clinton. Same year. He was good mates with Bill Clinton at Oxford.
Same year or was it?
Well, I don't know if same year, but they were there at the same time.
I think that Rhodes Scholars tend to, the alumni, I imagine, is pretty strong.
Well, there's only a couple of Rhodes Scholars every year as well.
Yeah. So
it's a very small number.
Yeah, actually went to uni with them, Phil Killicoat. That's his name, there you go.
Tony Ablett was a Rhodes Scholar as well.
Yeah, sure. I was asking about that. And
in theology.
Yeah, he was pissed off because...
There ain't many of them.
Tony Abbott. Really? We've had two Rhodes Scholars as... Prime Ministers, and Mike Fitzpatrick, who's the AFL chairman. He's a Rhodes Scholar.
Anyway, no, that was about it. So, Bob, if you're listening, fucking hook us up. Come down, son. Next time you're there, we'll come to you. But he was a really good guy. Really, really nice.
Yeah. No, I remember you telling him because you said, what's the truth about that story? He goes, yeah, it's all true. And as a matter of fact, I can still do it.
Yeah. That's right, yeah. Talking about the sculling, yeah. Because I hit him up about it, and that's where I started, Oxford College. That's where he actually got the record. And so after that, all those sort of in the alumni were always, whenever you went up, skull. And somehow that got out, and that's what happened with that sculling bit. He was telling me he was pissed off because some bastard beat it.
I tell you what, your impression wasn't good, but your bastard's pretty good.
Well, that's the only reason why I tried the impression then, because I knew the bastard that would carry it.
Fucking...
I could nail the bastard.
Yeah, I could hide behind the bastard. You know? So Bob Hawke was one of my favourite.
So dealing pontoon, there was occasion when I was in Vegas and with a couple of friends, and we'd spent the afternoon getting pissed, and we ended up in Excalibur, which for those that have been to Vegas is far from being the most luxurious hotel on the Strip.
It probably was once.
But it is on the Strip,
yep.
And it was accessible, and they're still serving alcohol, and it's a casino, right? So we end up at this pontoon table, and the croupier was about 50 and was from somewhere not English speaking. I think it was something like Hungary or Romania or so on. Yep. She was lovely. She was engaging. We were a bunch of 30-year-old piss heads playing pontoon.
Yep.
And literally for about 3 hours, every time we got an ace, we'd go, 10. And she would always reply with, there's no tens. And then we would obviously reply with fake shock, what do you mean there's no tens? And it would just cycle through. But obviously being drunk, it was fantastic for 3 hours.
Yeah.
And she was completely head-fucked by the end. She was head-fucked. Absolutely head-fucked.
So you were only joking for the second 2 hours? The first hour, I could imagine, you didn't actually remember each time.
It took us a while to catch up. Once we catch up, we overtook her.
We're like, well, now this is what we're doing now.
What I love.
It was good fun anyway.
Where you get like young kids who didn't know what pontoon was, they didn't realise that you get paid on 21 straight away.
Yep.
So they get 21, you don't wait for them to give any signal or whatever, you just pay them out straight away. And they think they're getting away with something, so they're like, I'm like, I don't say a word. That's the funniest thing. As a dealer, you know you fucked up when all of a sudden your table's quiet.
Right, yeah.
And like, it's less like saying in poker where you have that sense, you know what I mean? Something's wrong. Something's
wrong. Sense. You can sniff. Feel
something's
it.
Up, yeah. And being a dealer, you know when something just ruins whatever vibe is going on there. I remember this one time dealing blackjack. I was actually on the main floor. And I'm like, you got your first deal, then you got your subsequent deal. Then you start going from the last box back to the first to see what... first back to the last, see what they want to do. Hang on, it's all right?
Yeah, first to last, left to right.
Yeah, that's right. So anyway, I'm gone around, gone to the last box. Yeah, he's sat. And I've got like a five or something. So people have hit, got three cards. I've gone bang, six, bang, pitcher, 21. And someone in this box has gone, bang, fuck! And I've gone, oh, shit. And all of a sudden, everyone's gone, huh! And just silence.
Yep.
And I'm like, fuck. What is it? I'm looking around, I'm just thinking, something's wrong. Something here is wrong. I just don't know what it is. And they're not telling you. They say, shit. So I'm looking at it, I'm like, fucking, I don't know what it is. So, fuck, it's not my money. Let's start paying out. Surveillance, watching this hand.
Yep.
So they ring down and said so on. And they're like, come down and like, the supervisor's like, hang on a second, the guys. And he's listening to what's going on. And what happened is, I've dealt out everything. This guy on the end here, he's sat on 15 because I've got a five.
Yep.
When this guy here, and I've hit 21, he's banged the table. Obviously, makes a loud noise. I've looked at him. But as he's done that, off the discard rack, a six has popped off there and landed flush square where you'd usually place a card.
Yep.
Wow.
And so that's why I can't see that, but everyone at the table can. And they've gone, wow. Oh! And then obviously I think, that's funny. Shut the fuck up.
And then the movie realizes it's 21. Yep, so yep. Shut the fuck up. Yeah.
So and this landed perfectly. That guy, he's like,
well, yeah.
Wow.
Nothing.
So what? And what happened?
On the main floor, they'll reconstruct the hand and pay it out as it should be.
Right.
Yeah.
In the mahogany room, would they let it ride?
Depends how much money's on the table. They keep a stink. They'll let it ride. They'll just say whatever, because if you're playing blackjack, you're losing your money anyway. You ain't keeping your money.
That's a goodwill thing. Let's face it.
Yeah,
it is.
The thing with blackjack, whether it's 1.5 or 2% edge, if you're playing perfect blackjack, if you start off with $100 playing $10 a hand, or $1,000 playing $100 a hand, you can either double up or lose.
Yeah,
exactly.
If you double up, you can either double up again or lose.
Yeah.
But eventually, when you lose, you're fucked.
That's it.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's the end of the game. So, you know, letting something like that ride, I think, pays itself back.
Yeah.
99 times out of 100, and the positive PR is worth it.
That's why Vegas has the $2 buffets and all that kind of shit.
Not so much anymore.
No, probably not. But
the idea
is the same.
Now, they do have a budget which they use to reconcile such instances on their books as a PR payment.
Yeah, okay.
So they'll judge that as a PR payment. So they'll say, you can fuck up, but it's our best interest is to give them the money.
Yeah.
So it happens in every business. Yeah. Just goodwill. Yeah, good. Just good. Let it go.
Exactly. Yeah.
But the thing is, as a casino here where they've got legislation saying they're the only casino allowed, it's a bit of a rort.
They're held. And the fuck do they care?
Yeah. And the thing is, they won't have the same standards in the mahogany room as on the main floor, because people on the main floor, they know the casino they can go to. They can walk across the road to the other casino, and they ain't flying to Sydney on fucking anyone's time.
People in the mahogany room can go to Macau or Singapore now or Vegas or wherever.
And will. Just going back an hour and a half, we were saying Phil Ivey had his bodyguard. I just remembered. Remember there was that year some of the poker player got rolled out on the arrow?
They were playing, this was during the Aussie Millions, I'm sure, and they had a high stakes cash game.
Yeah.
And they had it at the table closest to the car park entrance.
Jesus.
And I think it was, you know, after they've been playing for 4 hours, what someone said, you know, it's $2 million on the table. And someone said, why is there $2 million on the table that's closest to the entrance door? And they all kind of went, as it dawned on them. And I think that's when they started putting it upstairs and
he went down the Yarra and he got rolled.
Yeah, he was staying at Crown Plaza. He was an American guy. And I'm guessing that he's booked Crown, not realizing that Crown isn't Crown.
Just
a little walk. So apparently someone sussed it out. And the thing is, he was coming back the next day. There's no reason for him to take the cash home. He could have kept that as a deposit in the casino.
Yeah.
And that's the lesson you learn. Don't ever take cash out of there.
That happened to Chris Money, to Greg Raymer as well, right?
Remember he was saying he got followed and he said, I'm not going in this room.
New Jersey or New Orleans or something. He got followed back to his room. I think he turned around and belted one of them.
I'm pretty sure it was Raymer.
Definitely Raymer.
Yeah, because I remember he said there was two people and he heard him and he just said, if I go into this room, I'm dead.
Yeah.
And he just said, I'm not going into this room. And his room, he said, if I go in there, I'm dead. And he just pushed them or shoved them or belted them and got away.
I don't suppose he would have run away.
Not Fossil Man.
It's not a spell man.
But especially with poker, it's not a huge moneymaker for the casino. It's more a marketing thing.
Yeah.
Crown's always
You take a rake and that's pretty much it. I mean, you have your seat. They've charged at the seat.
Not anymore. Yeah, $5 sit down, but there's no hourly. No hourly at low stakes.
Yeah.
Higher stakes it is. But, you know, the theory is if you've got poker players coming through the joint, those that win, fuck off home, and those that lose, fuck off home, and those that win might walk past a blackjack table and drop a couple of $100 or a couple of $100,000 if you feel Ivy.
Plus, also, there's some, like, obviously we know that poker is a different sort of beast to table games and gambling, that in regards to is it actually gambling or is it wagering or is it punting and things like that.
So game of skill versus it is a game of luck, skill. Right?
Yeah, exactly.
The best example I heard of trying to define it, is it really a game of skill? Is a game of skill you can deliberately lose.
Yeah.
A game of luck you can't deliberately lose.
Yeah.
So none of us could walk up to a slot machine or a roulette table and deliberately lose.
Yeah.
It's just fucking impossible.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
You can bet stupid, but you can't lose intentionally.
You know, because a roulette table, you can go and stick it all on 26, or you can spread it across 36 numbers and hope the 37th comes in.
I was going to say, put it on 37. But, chalk.
We've changed roulette into a game of skill. I'm going to rock up with a chalk, write 37 with a little circle around it, and stick all my chips on there, and then go, oh fuck it, when my number doesn't come in.
By the way, I'm using my shoe instead of chips. Hey, in for a penny.
Genius. We've now proven roulette's a game of skill.
I do what I can.
It can be a skill if you're a good cheater. Cheating is a skill in the casinos.
I used to love watching those on the Discovery Channels, the casino cheats.
Yeah.
Awesome.
I remember the ones, you know, when they invented the wand.
Yeah, the slots.
There's a little optical light, and this sticks up there, and basically it counts the gaps in between the coins, and this can make it so it doesn't see any gaps. And it just goes... Phew. I remember there was one they were showing it, and they're playing the slots, and, you know, they've got the wand up there, and they hit a jackpot, and they're like, oh, fuck.
Yeah,
we've hit a jackpot, means we get attention. Yeah. We're out of here. And that's how they got caught eventually.
Yeah.
Yep. Game of skill.
Oh, I don't think I ever lent it to you, but I've got a book that Penn Jillette wrote. It's called How to Cheat Your Friends at Poker.
Yeah, you've definitely referenced it before.
It's not a good book, and dubious how truthful it is. But in the back, it's got the mathematical tables. It's like, you know, drawing to a flush is, you know, in hold'em, it's 24%. In five-card stud, it's whatever percent. If you're cheating, 100%. So the last column, everything's 100%. It was good. I liked it.
I saw his theory. Penn and Teller in the Rio on one occasion in Vegas.
Oh, yeah, awesome.
You bought me the program.
I bought you the program back.
I just read it yesterday. Oh, so we cleaned out the shed and I found it again.
There you go. The thing I remember most about that, other than, you know, the tricks or the piece of magic that they did, were fantastic.
Yep.
But for the first half an hour before the show started, Penn Jillette is on a little side stage in the corner playing a double bass. Just chilling out, playing a double bass. I'm sitting with the kids, nudge the kids. See that guy over there playing that? He's going to be on stage in a minute. Yeah.
Loves his jazz music.
Really cool. Really, really cool.
Yeah, cause I remember one of the bands who were the big bands that I think they might play in the Penn and Teller Theatre every now and then. He goes and sits in with them. There's one band that he's welcome to sit in with in Vegas, where he just walks up with his double bass and goes and sits in with them.
I think he goes anywhere he likes, pretty much these days.
Vegas especially.
He's got his mugshot on billboards everywhere.
I know, because...
The theatre's called after them now, isn't it?
Yeah. It's the Penn and Teller Theatre. I think they've been there 15, 20 years or something like that.
Yeah.
And I think he says it's 20 metres from his car spot to their dressing room.
No shit.
So that's why exhausted every day. He's never...
He could have said 20 steps. They're big steps.
I was going to say 10.
Could be a long way.
Yeah, 6'8", something like that.
So which other superstars? We've talked about a superstar poker player in Phil Ivey. We've talked about Tiger Woods. Talked about Bob Hawke.
We did Fevin Warney last week or the week before.
Oh, did you?
Warney's a legend.
Warney was a champ. Yeah.
So, no, hang on. No, I've got my own Warney story. Right. I played against him in some Aussie Millions event.
Yeah.
And it was on my table, and we got into a hand where someone had raised, I 3-bet with King Queen. Warney flatted, the original raise of 4-bet. I 5-bet, so Warney thought it'd be a really good time to shove.
Of course.
Which just makes no sense. When you hear his hand, it makes no sense whatsoever. The other guy folded, and I'd fucking hung myself with King Queen and called it off.
Yep.
Two queens on the flop. The rest of it runs out dry. I'm thinking, fuck yeah, I'm home and host. Warney turns over queen nine and had rivered the nine to bust me. So he's six bet shoved over two aggressors in a five and six bet flop. His entire stack with no fold equity whatsoever.
Just one question. Queen nine, suited?
I don't remember if the fucker had it suited, but I do remember that nine on the river. Like Mickey D says, everyone remembers the hands of wisdom, right? And, you know, shake hands. I tell him I'm going, I'm off to fuck Liz Hurley. and then I'm watching his Twitter feed afterwards. And he's banging on about how well he's playing and he's crushing the table. But you motherfucker, you are just sucking out. I also heard in the first orbit of the first level of that tournament, he'd busted someone's aces with pocket kings, got it all in and sucked out. And so throughout the tournament, he's tweeting about how fucking awesome he is and how well he's playing. Not the fact that he's fucking it in 3 hours on the motherfucking river. Yeah.
Did you say anything to your 15 Twitter followers?
No, but I have now.
And the thing is, especially for poker players, you're almost more proud of good luck over playing good skill. You know what I mean? Like, I should have won this one, but I fucking just nailed this dude's ass to the wall where I had no business being there. Fuck that guy.
I'd rather be lucky than good.
Yeah, so I think that's like, you can tell the level of poker players by obviously how they play, but how they'll talk about stuff as well and how they'll assess sort of their own play like that. Where it's like, dude, you don't realize that you should have been riding your good luck, not trying to ride your pretend good skill.
Yeah.
But I remember a few times like playing home games at your place where, you know, shit's happened and your head's up. There's one at the last time I played. There's the other guy had pocket sevens, I had pocket sixes, and we've got all in. I was going, that happens.
It is what it is, yeah.
And then a six hits, I'm like, well, it is what it is.
That happens
but,
too.
Yeah, but I don't get excited about it because it's just that's just what happens.
It was a home game for $100.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
It's still fun, but...
I was watching a rerun of the WPT in the Bellagio from... 10 years ago, whenever when
the World Poker Tour was at its best.
When the World Poker Tour was at its best, and this is when this is when Joe Hashem won his WPT to become a Triple Crown winner.
Wasn't it the Bellagio? It was the Brunson, wasn't it? Didn't he win the Brunson?
The Five Diamond Classic, yeah. Which was held at the Bellagio.
Oh, was it there? Yeah. Sorry,
because that's where Doyle never leaves.
That's right. Yeah.
So, and final table, and there's four players left or something, and Hashem and some other kid have got it all in pre-flop. Hash has got pocket queens and the other kid's got ace queen. The flop's dry and the kid turns an ace. And Hashem's, you can see the anger building up in him. And the kid's stoic. And he's 20, you know?
Yeah.
Or 21. He's played in Vegas. He's absolutely 100% stoic. And Hashem's like, you know, obviously you can't hear him swear, but he looks very, very unhappy about it, as you would be.
Yep.
Although I'd probably survive more if I'd picked up $8.5 million 6 months earlier.
Helps.
And then the river is the case queen, and Hashem sucks out.
Sucks out. Yeah.
And the kid still remains fairly stoic, and Hash is the one fist pumping and jumping into his rail and so on. But I look at that and think that emotional roller coaster should be the other way around.
Yeah, Hash has been there and done that. The seasoned pro.
The kid is there for the first time. Yeah. It's life-changing money for the kid. It's a tick on the CV for Hash.
Yeah,
but I don't know if it's life-changing money for the kid, because a lot of those guys, they're maths, and it's just, this is what it is. And it's just, well, that's just more money. And I'll just, it's more points, you know, as opposed to cash.
Well, that's what they say, right? The money's just a way of keeping score.
Yeah, exactly.
But in fairness to Hash, now I've nailed him for his behaviour 10 years ago on a WTPT rerun on YouTube, which seemed a bit harsh.
And it was probably more than 10.
just in fairness to him, that 5 or 6 years ago, we'd had a home game and my daughter had won, and she went to bed that night after beating all the hairy-ass blokes in the home game.
She would have been 9, 10.
9 or 10, yeah, she was.
Pretty sure we were both at that table too.
You were there too. You might have even taken the picture, actually, but... still there to a day with eyes half shut at 3 o'clock in the morning with her king five.
Yeah.
And anyway, that night she went to bed and she wrote a little letter to Joe Hashem saying that, you know, she admires, she was into poker and, you know, he was a hero and all the rest of it. And Faye used to carry that letter, Faye, my wife, used to carry that letter with her. And one day we're walking through Crown Poker Room and Joe's there, stood off, not at a table, but stood off to the side chatting to one of the soups. And Faye went up to Joe and gave him the letter and said, you know, would you read this? Would you mind signing it for my daughter Maddie?
Yep.
And Joe read it and smiled and so on. And when Faye asked him, would you mind signing it, he said, no. Nah. Deadpan, no, nah. no. Nah. And we thought, oh, you motherfucker.
yeah.
And he said, don't worry, I'll do something better than that.
Slow rolling.
He's so much, yeah. fucking knit rolled. He knit rolled. Knit rolled a fucking 10-year-old girl. That's disgusting. I thought about it till then. Fucking main event winner, WPT, EPT, and fucking slow rolling the 10-year-old. There's a fucking unique quad. anyway, right, calm down. He said, no, don't worry about it, I'll do something better than that. I said, oh, fair enough. And we walked off, or Faye walked off very disappointed, shared a story with me. That's a shame, a bit rough. And then it was about 4 days later, we got a handwritten note from Joe through the post addressed to Maddie at home. Full handwritten note with a, you know, Joe Hatcham postcard, pass the sugar, and
yep.
well done, Maddie, et cetera, et cetera. And I thought that was fucking awesome.
Yeah.
I was really, really impressed.
Takes 5 minutes of his time.
Yep. But it was worth its weight in gold.
And as you can say, 5 or 6 years ago, Maddie still got it.
Yeah. She's
no
still got
doubt
it.
It's still there.
It was fantastic. And, you know, there's been times in the years subsequently I've sat at the table, and obviously Melbourne, Joe Hashem, his name comes up frequently.
Mm.
And some people have got different views, and some people have had positive encounters. Some people haven't been given the love that they've hoped for when encountering him. I will always endeavour to defend him because of what he did that time.
He's got a pretty good reputation, I think.
He definitely does at Crown. Yeah. I think he was really smart with the way he went about it. Like, even when he won, after he won the world's the bracelet, he didn't go crazy and go, fuck, I'm the best poker player in the world. I'm going to play everything. He was very smart in getting a sponsorship by Crown and being an ambassador for them, because he doesn't gamble much. I may be dealt blackjack to him twice ever.
Really?
That's it, yeah. He really doesn't gamble at all. So we go around Crown, do his appearances, and I'm guessing a lot of the entrances for him locally are sponsored and whatnot. So
I'm sure Crown pays him, or AAA. Or he was PokerStars.
Yeah. PokerStars for a long time.
Yeah.
And Wild Turkey as well, was it?
Something like that, yeah. Because I think that was tied in with Crown when they had that Joker Poker thing going on or some shit.
That was the Wild Turkey Joker Poker.
Something
like that. Was that filmed at Crown?
Yes, the filmed at
Salon. That was the worst poker show that's ever existed.
Yeah, yeah. Funny thing is, the guy who was dealing it, Luke, he was actually really funny. Like, it would have been best if you just mic'd him up, because he's fucking hilarious. Like, a real funny dude.
Joker Poker, did you ever see it?
No.
It was four-handed, and they had comedians playing poker. But the problem was, they were all being silent, so they weren't the best comedians to start with, and the poker was shit. It was, okay, what do I do? No, okay, if you want to call, I'll put it out. Yeah. So it was come to learn poker.
Right,
on
TV. I can't see that being a success.
There was one that was... sorry, that's my trick. That's okay. Yeah. There was one that... the show went for, I think, an hour, but there was only four hands.
Jesus.
Because it was all in each hand.
Wow.
They stretched it out. What's his name? Doc? Is it Neeson? Nielsen?
The
Kiwi.
You know
who I'm talking about.
Lee Nelson.
I think he was one of the commentators along.
He was Aussie Millions winner.
Yeah. I think he won it like the year after of this Joker Poker. Just so much padding. They had to pad the shit out of it. And every now and then they come out and go, okay, this is a Wild Turkey bonus hand, and they put an extra 5,000 chips in the middle and stuff like that. And it was so bad. It didn't last very long, surprisingly.
Yeah, no, it was never going to happen.
But there was hip-hop poker once.
There was what?
Hip-hop poker.
Okay.
Which is
in Whitetown, Melbourne?
No. It was in America.
Okay.
And they had a bunch of rap stars playing poker, and I remember watching it when
Nelly's a big poker player.
Is he?
Very famous Nelly. You know, he goes to the Bellagio and plays a high roller in Bobby's room.
Bobby's room. Jesus.
All the pros are fucking racing over from Aria and Wynn and Phoenician to race into a game in Bobby's room, play 5,100 or whatever with Nelly.
Damn.
Awesome. You say they all like their rap.
Well, and a lot of the DJs that play Vegas, Steve Aoki is a big poker player. That's right, American Asian.
Except, that's something, poker table, and especially as a dealer, that you know that it's horrible to have stereotypes, but Jesus fucking Christ, they're true.
Yeah.
Like, a stereotype's a good place to start.
It very much polarizes it in places like Melbourne as well.
Yeah.
But
Steve Aoki plays high stakes, and it's apparently a pretty good poker player, and used to play a lot before he became Steve Aoki. But his crew that travel with him play at the high levels with him. Yep. And apparently they're fucking atrocious. So, you know, the pros are rushing out not to play Steve Aoki, but to play who he brings with him.
I remember hearing stories that Hustler, what's his name?
Hugh Hefner.
The other guy, Larry Flint.
Larry Flint.
He loves poker and he loves stud and stuff like that. And apparently he's not all that great at it. But, I mean, you know, he's an old bastard. But he'd have
a 5-card draw.
They'd have, you know, he'd play and they go, okay, I just got to go take care of something. You know, you'd be gone for half an hour. Game stop. No one's playing. we're only here for him. They all go sit at the bar and just wait. Oh, Larry's back. All right, let's back into it.
Yeah,
okay. I mean, he's got more money to throw away anyway. So what does he care?
Well, Dan Bilzerian's the other one, right? So I don't know if you've ever seen any of the Dan Bilzerian interviews on YouTube. I think All In Mag did them.
You know who he's talking about.
You can't avoid his stuff on Facebook. But no, I haven't sorted it out and looked it on YouTube, no. But yeah, I know enough
to... You should look at the Dan Bilzerian interviews on All In Mag if you get the chance.
Yeah.
But, you know, interest in life and all the rest of it. Lives the lifestyle that every 18-year-old dreams of, but every 30-year-old would be too embarrassed to lead.
Yeah.
But in terms of poker, and he's made a shitload out of poker, he will openly admit he's nowhere near the best poker player in the world. But what he was very strong on is I'm the best at table selection. Right. So I can bring together the biggest games with the biggest fish and be the best in my pond.
Yeah.
If poker's measured on making money, therefore I, Dan Bilzerian, are the best in the world.
Yeah.
Because I can organise such a game. Yeah. The other story that he says, that is just fucking brilliant, is he's mid-30s or something now, but he famously had a couple of heart attacks.
Oh, no shit.
So he's an ex-Marine or SEAL or something.
Steroidism.
He's ex-Marine or SEAL, super fit, does crazy shit all the time. And he was out on a bender. And this bender went from one thing to another and lasted about 4.5 to 5 days. And starts feeling his heart go. He's in hospital. His mum and his dad and his girlfriend have flown out to him. And he's with the doctor, the family doctor that had also looked after Michael Jackson.
Do you mean looked after?
Yeah, looked after. Okay. I'm like, well, who knows?
Dr. Cosby.
And the doctor says, look, I've got to ask you a few questions about what you've taken. It can very much affect what drugs we give you to help you survive your heart attacks. Yeah. And Dan Bilzerian goes, yeah, no problem. So what have you taken? And he says, well, I may have smoked a little bit of marijuana. his mum gives him the look of... and then he says, and I may have... done a little bit of cocaine. And his dad gives him the look of and then he says and I may have done a little bit of Viagra. And his girlfriend says, you fucking motherfucker. Anyway, it's worth watching.
It tells a good story.
Alright, you gotta send me that one so I don't have to watch all the other bullshit. I can just get straight to that one,
straight to the heart attack story,
because I thought he came out it was actually a fraud. He actually inherited all his money. He didn't win from poker at all.
I think he did inherit a lot, because his father did time in jail, I think, because he was for bond fraud or something.
Yeah, something like that. I think that it's a case of he made $100 million by starting with 50 or something like that.
It's not like he was
rags to riches.
So I would have imagined if he was that great at poker, probably be about him, this podcast.
Well, I think a little bit of it's, I don't think he had the fear of losing.
Ah, of course. Which obviously makes a huge difference. Obviously, I'm guessing all of you, well, me and Heath, we've had our bankroll on the felt before.
Well, it's the Andy Beal story, right? That's the Andy Beal story of turning up to Vegas and I want to make the stakes high enough so the pros have fear of losing and therefore their edge is reduced.
Yeah, exactly. So. And there are some people, especially with a lot of the Asians that will play Baccarat, they don't have fear because a lot of them come from Southeast Asia where they have Buddhist culture. And even though they say you're not supposed to gamble, like any religion, people pick and choose what they're going to kind of abide by. So that's why the reason why I loved having a table full of Asian people was because most of the time they wouldn't blame you. And if they did, it was another language you didn't understand. So a lot of time if something goes wrong, it's because their luck wasn't right or something else, but it was never... You fucking cunt took my money. Give it back.
It was karmic misalignment.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's all like, oh, I fucked up. Where did I go wrong? Where in my Baccarat scorecard did I fuck this one up? Oh, of course. There were two bankers and three and then two bankers. Yeah, that's where I fucked up. Oh, I'm so silly. And so, but the Europeans are the fucking worst to deal to, because they're so unreasonable.
When you're talking about Europeans, are you talking about immigrants into Melbourne, or you're talking about during the Aussie Millions when all the German and Finnish sickos turn up?
Actually, we'll start off. Poker players are the worst fucking game. Full stop. Like, poker play. If you see poker players playing at a poker table, completely reasonable, can calculate all the odds. What are the chances that I'm going to win? What risks should I take? What are the chances that he's going to win?
And accept the turn of the card.
And be you know, composed.
Yep.
At a blackjack table or any other table, they are the fucking worst gamblers. And every dealer will attest to this. They were like, this one, I remember, like, they just can't believe that they've lost because they're
not
so smart.
Used to it a lot. Exactly. That's a problem.
But the thing is, they're good at calculating odds. And you can tell, when you go to a blackjack table, chances are you're not going to win.
The odds are not
in your favor. Doesn't matter how good you are at poker. It's going to make no fucking difference. Anyway, I remember being in Tiki Room one time, and every dealer will tell you this. Aussie Millions time is the fucking worst time to work.
Really?
Worst time, yeah. All the poker players are in there. And poker, like, honestly, poker players ruin your fucking day. They are the worst gamblers by a long way. And this is only at table games, not at poker and that. Because I don't do poker. It's only at, like, blackjack, baccarat, roulette, all the minor games, whatever.
I think there's a bit of an issue, too, with poker players because they spend so much time in the casino that they feel like they're, you know, we're valued.
They're on home territory.
Yeah. Whereas the casino goes, no, mate, you're a fucking leech.
Yeah.
These guys that play baccarat every day, they're our fucking...
Yeah. The other thing to bear in mind is a lot of the poker players that turn up in the Aussie Millions from overseas, whether it be the Europeans or the Americans and so on, Crown's funding them.
Yeah.
And they want them to be there, and they're drawing the marketing of having player X, player Y, player Z turn up. So they come with an element of, I'm fucking important, and Crown want me to be here, so I can push the limits a little bit.
Yeah, exactly, definitely. And they quickly find out they can't, because they're not winning their money off of Crown. They're winning their money off other people, and Crown will take, like, a entrance or a rake or whatever they do, which is, it's irrelevant, more or less, in what their profits are. But I remember I was in Tiki Room one time when I was dealing, and it was Aussie Millions time, so whenever anyone comes up and they look like a poker player, generally they're going to be a cunt. And so you're like, fuck, all right. This one dude comes...
headphones, hoodie, sunglasses.
Yeah, pretty much. And you're going to see...
a look of entitlement.
Yeah. See, with the people who are addicted to gambling full stop, they'll just wear trackies and whatever, but they'll generally be clean trackies and a clean top. And then they'll have a Louis Vuitton handbag or something. Poker players will wear the jeans they've worn for the last 10 years and probably the lucky ones, so they're never going to be changed ever. But I remember this old Asian lady playing box two in... box four. So second last box in blackjack. Really nice. Didn't really say much. Sat there just putting her money out, betting her pairs as they do and just having a quiet game. Anyway, poker player comes and starts betting the box before her, which if you play blackjack, there's really bad etiquette to come and go before someone because
they're taking their cards.
You're getting their cards, yeah. And so anyway, he comes in, starts betting and doesn't sit down, just stands there, puts all his chips down. And you know poker players because they've got fuck tons of small, irrelevant chips that you don't want in your float.
Right.
So you're sitting there with stacks of fives and some ones.
All the red fives.
Yeah. And the worst thing is ones. So you're like, what the fuck do I do with ones?
And you want a 25, you want a 50, 25 or 50
exactly.
minimum, right?
Exactly. No, well, I've got these fucking five, I'll put them on pairs.
The fives are only good for me to pay it off a fucking blackjack.
Exactly. Yeah. And so what I usually do is I'll make that payout with those five fucking one chips. You're a poker player, mate. You know,
you'll need them.
Yeah. That's one thing about a dealer is that you can't be a cunt, but you have to know how to draw that. Push that line of passive aggressiveness to where you can let this person know, fuck you, but you legally haven't done anything wrong.
Yeah.
So they get the picture. But the worst thing is that poker players will take the same logic of poker to a blackjack table. And so this guy's got 20 and I've got a picture. And I've gone like, bang, ace, blackjack. It's like, fucking bullshit. I'm like, dude, it's your first hand. Like, at least give me three hands before you start abusing me. That's like my general rule. Three hands, then you can start abusing me. I'm cool with that. And so I'm like, dude, yeah, it sucks, you know, whatever. Sits back down, wins a couple of hands, loses one, wins a couple more. Next time, he's got a pitcher. I've got an ace. Bang, pitcher. Oh, fucking bullshit again. Again. I'm like, twice. And so he gets up, fucking storms off. This is fucking bullshit. This is sick. Sick. And poker player saying sick annoys the fuck out of me. It's like people saying winner, winner, chicken dinner. It's like, just give it up, guys. Come with your own thing.
Okay, I'll bear that in mind next time I say winner.
Yeah. Damn, it's sick. Especially at a blackjack table. It's like, it's not sick, man. It's fucking odds.
Yeah.
Like, see, this old Asian lady's been playing her whole life. Didn't move.
It's not sick because I see it every 5 minutes
exactly
for the last
right.
7 years.
Yeah.
At our home games, we used to have a saying called getting Cindy lucky.
Right.
Because there's a guy there whose name was Cindy. There was once where he was drawing to a flush and he missed it. He goes, oh, I got unlucky. I'm like, no, You didn't get lucky. That's the problem. Yep. So we got Cindy lucky is when you're unlucky not to get lucky.
I thought you said Cindy lucky. I'm like, no, a few lucky Cindys, actually. Yeah, that kind of makes sense. That holds water. Yeah.
He's Turkish. His real name's too fucking long. It's shortened to Cindy.
That's like, I remember seeing this guy. He was actually from Laos, whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
And like, their names are fucking enormous.
Yeah.
And I remember looking at it, like, just, they wouldn't even fit on the card. I'm like, how do you pronounce your name, man? He goes, Sam.
Yep.
All right, fair enough.
Pretty deep.
Yep, that'll work. Yeah, pretty deep. Yeah,
because his name's
like some Irish name, yeah.
Okay.
It's not Irish. Yeah, Israel.
Jewish-ish, I don't know. Yeah. I think his real name's Kasim. And he went to a poker room in Texas. He's trying to, you know, put his name down. Yeah. And like, Kasim. He's like, what? Kasim. What? And his mate goes, Freddie. Just make it easy. Goes, all right, I'm Freddie.
That's what it's called, yeah.
I do that same every time I'm in Vegas ordering a coffee at Starbucks. I'm fed up with people writing the name Duncan with 27 wrong spelling errors as if I serve fucking ice cream. So now I just say my name's Bob every time I'm in Starbucks. Because they write it on the cup, right?
What?
So not only do they get it wrong, but they write it on the cup. So I have to go around showing everyone else in the casino that the fucker in Starbucks can't spell.
You know, there's another store you can go to. You can get donuts as well. They'll get your name right.
Donut. So anyway, yeah,
I don't know where we're going.
This poker player, he's sitting there like stolen the lady's box and going on like a loose tapper, just playing.
When you say stolen the lady's box.
you missed our Edison story. The pleasure box. We'll go to that one. And so he's got up and he's fucking, oh, this is sick. This is bullshit. Oh, fuck this. And I'm looking at him and I'm throwing, God, this is fucking ridiculous. And the old lady sitting in front of me, he's got a bet. Just pushed it out. No more bets. Come back. The fuck is this? I can't even get up and walk off. I'm like, you walked off, man. I thought you weren't playing anymore. I mean, I wouldn't play after what cards you got. I don't like hearing that.
Just throwing fucking gasoline on it.
No, I'm leaving. Like, shit, that'll teach me. Who's next table? The old lady. Thank you.
And is that, if you could receive tips, you would have got one.
The amount of times, if I could have received tips, and only because as a dealer, I just tell people straight up, because especially in the mahogany room, where the worst part with the casinos that I worked with, well, recently, was that people have got a problem with gambling, and that's their problem. And they treat them like they're just stupid. Like they can do whatever they want to them, and they're not going to come in. But the thing is, for these people to lose all that money at that casino, they've got to be smart at something. They've got to be getting that, money from somewhere.
Or they're embezzling.
Well, that's the smart of something. You know what I mean?
What did you say?
Embezzling.
I'm not saying it has to be legal. I'm just saying they've got to be smart at something. Yeah. You know what I mean? So they've got that intelligence. But the thing is, to get a job in a casino, you can be smart at anything. Like, you can teach anyone to be a dealer. Anyone. It's a monkey job.
Yeah, it's just repetition.
Learning through repetition at its nth degree.
Because I remember you saying, like, with the training, a lot of it is just ergonomics.
Yeah, exactly.
Because you're doing the same actions over and over again. So it's, you put your feet here.
Yeah.
You do this action. Because if you do it this way, your wrist is going to be fucked.
I'm not sure I 100% agree with that, Brendan.
Probably right.
You know, because Crown holds a local monopoly and there's no tipping, there's no incentive for either party to drive improvements in performance, whether that be customer service or whatever it may be, compared to the bigger casinos and the higher profile casinos in Vegas. Highly competitive environment. Yep. The dealers are tipped. The best dealers rise to the top, and the worst dealers fall out the bottom.
Yeah.
But you know, there's no incentive. And without incentive, it's not going to happen.
The other way is, though, I mean, you can't... You know, I'm fed up. I'm going to go work at the other casino. Fucking can't. No, so, I mean, there's only job retention.
Yeah.
And maybe rise
Their job retention is terrible.
Yeah.
Terrible. Like, it's over 50% turnover in the first year of being employed there.
I've been to worse places.
And the thing is, they're happy with that turnover because they don't have any, well, apparently.
No long service leave. Long service leave.
None of that. And so they'll actually try and make conditions worse for the long termers so they can get them out.
Get
rid of those. Because the thing is, what you get there is you get a lot of people. The place, it's not. You can get away with being not making wise decisions and not being found out about it because people come in there and always spending money because they have a problem with gambling.
Yeah.
And so if you looked at sort of what that company is and what level of education you need to be a manager at a similar company that wasn't a casino, let's say Telstra or say Virgin or whatever, something like that, You'd have degrees coming out your ass. You'd have experience in whatnot.
Coles.
Yeah. In there, it's not the same, you know. All you need to do has been through that system, which has zero integrity when it comes to education. Yeah.
And especially with education. If you haven't got a university degree, you'll go nowhere in Coles.
So what happens is that... You're going down.
They'll shove you off to fucking Bilo or something. Just trying to hide you anyway.
So what happens is you get people coming in...
put my fucking death bell away.
Especially like many... like anyone you deal with are good people on the floor. This is like level 6 management. People...
The internet. It's given us so much greatness. Cat videos, lol, witty memes, even the podcast you're listening to right now. Also, eBay. Did you know 90% of items sold on eBay are brand new? The latest fashion, top tech, the best in beauty and sporty stuff. So much of it is brand new, and you can get it for less on eBay. Download the eBay app now for the best deals delivered fast.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, "What the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?" So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.